Support for the South Carolina Lead is made possible in part by AARP. The coronavirus continues to affect us all, keeping us apart, but we don't have to be alone. AARP is here in South Carolina, providing information that can help you and your family. Click to connect at aarp.org/sc.
Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on June 22nd, 2020, from my home studio in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. And this podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific news and stories. This episode features another look at Senator Tim Scott's Justice Act and related police reforms at the state level. We hear from a lawyer about workers' compensation issues during these COVID-19 times, and more information from one of DHEC's top officials handling the pandemic. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a one-minute-long voicemail with your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on in your world at 803-563-7169. Tell us what you've been up to, how these new case numbers and these increases are affecting you, how they may have changed your routine, or maybe not. Let us know at 803-563-7169. And also, if you've tested positive for COVID-19, we'd also be interested in hearing from you as well. So please give us a shout. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 659 deaths, and currently there are 25,666 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of June 22nd at 4 p.m. Some more data. Of the 7,119 inpatient beds currently used in the state, 731 are occupied by patients who have either tested positive or are under investigation for COVID-19. That is a record number right there, folks. And over the past 5 days, we have averaged 1,025 cases and 8 deaths a day, just to put all this in perspective since we've been seeing some record new case counts. DHEC also announced on Monday that it was increasing its testing goal to 140,000 for the month of June, July, and August, and 165,000 tests a month for the rest of 2020. So really increasing their testing strategy right there. And friend of the pod, Andy Brown with the Post and Courier, tweeted recently, just one example of how South Carolina is driving up cases in other states. West Virginia officials announced that 49 COVID-19 cases have been linked to people who recently vacationed in Myrtle Beach. And officials urge that those who have vacationed in the area should get tested. On Monday, Senator Tim Scott and Governor Henry McMaster held a press conference with other officials in North Charleston to discuss Scott's new police reform bill, the Justice Act. Officials also outlined police reforms and current practices in place at the state level, as well as headwinds that they face. Much of Scott's bill is targeted on increasing reporting and using federal funds as an incentive to do so for agencies. Another aspect would be looking at moving some responsibilities away from officers who have essentially also become social workers, counselors, and sometimes psychologists in certain situations.
A part of the legislation includes a commission that will focus its attention on what is in the president's executive order, which is around the importance of co-responders. We have to have experts in the field with the officers, and this is something that's been asked for since the early 80s when we saw a shuttering of so many of our mental health facilities. We are down from my last understanding of around 600,000 fewer beds in America today than we had 30 years ago. The impact of that is we're asking officers to do things that they have not necessarily been trained to do. Mental health issues, addiction issues, and homelessness. These issues might be better served by having co-responders coming to a scene, and I think that will save lives without any question.
Senator Tim Scott's bill doesn't outlaw chokeholds, but it does withhold federal funds from police agencies that do not prohibit chokeholds, except when deadly force is authorized. Scott said the practice is pretty much banned across the state, and State Law Enforcement Division Chief Mark Keel said around 50% of state agencies report use of force to the FBI, something Tim Scott wants to see at 100% nationwide. And Keel also said agencies report to the National Decertification Index discipline action taken against officers, something that other agencies can reference when making a hire. But Chief Keel announced new proposals he made to the Law Enforcement Training Council this month to improve training and increase disciplinary record transparency.
I've asked the Academy staff to begin planning for implementation of mandatory annual training into racial bias, diversity, and de-escalation training as part of officers' required annual training. The 12-week basic class that officers go through now already includes about 42 and a half hours of related training, but this will make it mandatory that it's done annually. I've asked Academy staff to also research what authority the Training Council has to hold agencies accountable for failure to prosecute allegations of misconduct when officers are terminated, which ultimately result in officers retaining their certification and having their misconduct allegations expunged. And last, I've asked the Academy staff to research whether the Law Enforcement Training Council has the authority to require an officer who has had an excessive use of force allegation filed with the Academy and is still employed by an agency to have another psychological evaluation before prior to returning to duty. I think, as I've stated, that you can see that South Carolina law enforcement has already taken steps to hold its officers accountable. And Senator Scott's Justice Act will just strengthen that effort.
But like with so many problems, funding is an issue. Charleston County Sheriff Al Cannon said more funding for the Criminal Justice Academy needs to come from the state instead of traffic stops, a funding mechanism many see as a problem in and of itself.
This state and the General Assembly has continuously underfunded the South Carolina criminal justice system, and that needs to stop. 60% of the Academy's budget comes from traffic tickets. So you're paying policemen to write tickets to fund a criminal justice academy. That's unacceptable. I've made that point in Columbia, and they do nothing. If nothing else comes out of this, and we don't adequately fund the academy, we're going to continue having problems because they're barely able to complete the basic recruit training that is required by law.
McMaster agreed that the Academy is underfunded, but did not push lawmakers to increase funding during the press conference. Granted, it's a difficult time to discuss what funding for a lot of the budget looks like right now. And separate but related, South Carolina State Republicans made several legislative proposals on Monday, including fully funding body cameras and better use of force standards, among others. That legislation won't be taken up until the new legislative session starts in January, so attention will remain on what happens at the federal level until then. Just so you know, the first procedural vote on Senator Tim Scott's bill will take place Wednesday. Also worth noting, Senator Lindsey Graham was in Aiken on Monday to participate in a roundtable discussion with local law enforcement, community leaders, religious leaders, and elected officials. And I just want to mention that a lot of things coincided Monday afternoon during the taping, including a House Ways and Means Committee meeting, the Accelerate ED announcements about school reopenings, and more. So we'll have this information for you in Wednesday's pod. Stay tuned. As companies continue to reopen their doors, health experts say that until much more testing has been done and a vaccine developed, they may be increasing their risk of employees and customers becoming sick with COVID-19. Mike Switzer with the South Carolina Business Review spoke with Kevin Couch, a workers' compensation employer defense attorney with Willison, Jones, Carter, and Baxley in Greenville, South Carolina.
First of all, give us an idea of what the workers' compensation law area is right now with this brand new world that we're all living in. I'm assuming that you've been kind of busy?
Yes and no. It's been a lot like some other businesses where we're living in a little bit of an unknown. So we have a lot of questions about how that's going to affect our clients, the employers, the insurance carriers, the self-insureds, you know, those people who are bringing in folks back to work. As far as our firm, we're busy. We're answering those questions as best as we can.
Walk us through now then what the implications are that you see for workers' compensation claims going forward compared to how they have been handled in the past.
I would draw a line kind of around healthcare providers or those companies that provide some type of healthcare related service. I think those are the types of companies that are really going to have to pay attention to COVID, at least from a workers' compensation perspective, because what we believe is, at least according to the law, as we understand it, applied to COVID-19, the employee, in order to have a valid workers' compensation claim, is really going to have to prove that they were at some sort of increased risk of developing the disease in the workplace. And based on what we know about COVID, in that it's just as easily community acquired, that they're carriers that may not be symptomatic, unless you have some type of known risk, and again, specifically in the healthcare field is probably where that's going to be easiest to prove, it's going to be really difficult to prove a workers' compensation case for, you know, those employees that exist outside the healthcare field.
So do you feel that claims going forward then will be pretty much limited to the healthcare field?
You'll probably have an influx of workers' compensation claims across all businesses, and it's going to take a little bit of time to work through those, and especially some of our larger employers up here in Greenville, where I am, some of the industrial manufacturers, they probably will have some workers' compensation claims, and we're going to have to do discovery like we would in the other case, and we're going to have to litigate a few of these claims before people start figuring out what is and what isn't going to work. My opinion is you'll probably see a lot of those claims outside of healthcare probably start to dwindle down as lawyers work through these cases.
Is there some standard advice that you are giving companies now to help them alleviate some potential liabilities here?
Sure. Some of our issues kind of interrelate to other specialties as far as OSHA, certainly some requirements as far as personal protective equipment with gloves and masks. There are also a lot of employment law is federally grounded. You know, what constitutes a medical exam? Can you take an employee's temperature? How far can you go to protect your employees in the workplace? So one of the pieces of core advice that I would give is go ahead and if you haven't already formed some type of internal COVID-19 team, you may want to look at doing that. You really want to make a comprehensive plan about how do we minimize our risk, how do we protect our employees, and how do we keep moving with our business so people can work and make money and support their families.
And I think that we've certainly seen many instances of employers taking that extra step and many extra steps to make sure that their workers and customers are protected. And in fact, that almost seems to be the next normal going forward, even after we are through all of this.
I would agree. You know, you really want to focus on the well-being of everyone. Your employees, in a sense, are one constituency, but your customers, vendors, what is the best policy as it relates to those core groups, and where do those overlap, and where can we make some good decisions for everyone? We do want to look at individual claims as far as workers' compensation, but we also want to structure those things going forward where you minimize risk for workers' compensation and maybe some of these other specialties as well.
Interesting report there, Mike, especially as businesses return to work and more of their employees test positive for the virus. This is something state lawmakers are looking at addressing to provide some liability relief from businesses following DHEC guidelines should their employees or customers say they contracted COVID-19 from the workplace. Both the House and Senate will be looking at legislation dealing with this matter. DHEC physician Dr. Brandon Traxler joined me via Skype on This Week in South Carolina to discuss the increase in cases and hospitalizations, which we expect to see increasing since it's now been 2 weeks from one of our highest case count weeks. I started off by asking Dr. Traxler about the disturbing increases we're seeing.
We are concerned by increasing case counts. You know, we want to see the numbers doing the opposite. We want to see those trends going downwards. And as you pointed out, last week we saw some of our largest case counts in single days that we've had so far in the pandemic. And so we really just encourage everybody to please keep doing it. We know it's not easy. We know we're all tired of doing it, but, you know, doing that social distancing, really just when you're around other people outside your household, take a few steps back further apart than you normally would. Try to get that 6-foot distance. Wear masks anytime you're out in public or around other people, and really just avoiding the large group gatherings. So it sounds simple, but those are our best tools against this virus.
And when we talk about large group gatherings, Is that what's been spawning a lot of this? Obviously, these numbers really kicked up after Memorial Day. What role did that holiday weekend play? And going forward, do you feel like that maybe our guard has been let down because of the reopenings going on in the state?
I think that we just continue to observe overall people doing a little bit less of the social distancing and less mask wearing for whatever reason. And so, you know, it comes back to, again, that what sounds simple, but that main message that those are our best weapons against the spread of this disease right now. And so, you know, this isn't the time to be letting our guard down, as you said, for those things.
But we did see an uptick after Memorial Day. So is that something you guys can point to and say, okay,
The timing, mm-hmm. I mean, we cannot for certain link it, you know, with absolute certainty, but the timing based on how long it takes between an exposure and to get sick, we did start seeing that increase at the appropriate amount of time after Memorial Day. However, you know, it's continued since then pretty constantly. And so I don't think we can point to any one event or one holiday. I think it is more just that overall, you know, everyday life, not doing as much social distancing and mask wearing.
Just kind of switching gears a little bit to hospitalizations. We've seen a record number of hospitalizations now. Do those typically fall? How soon after did we see that spike last week? So are we going to start seeing more and more of this coming down when it comes to hospitalizations? Are we going to see, you know, we're at 607 hospitalizations as of Wednesday. Do we expect that to go up? And if so, how much can we handle at this point?
Sure. So we do typically expect a week to 2 week lag, probably closer to a week for hospitalizations between case counts correlated to hospitalization counts. And that is because with this virus and this disease, often it will be almost a week into it before somebody, you know, potentially needs, and not everybody does, but plenty of people do need to be in the hospital for care. And so that's why it'll be sometimes that week or so lag between when the case is reported and they're diagnosed and when the hospitalizations will reflect that. You know, hospitals, you know, prepare for this. They all have excellent response plans. They all have plans in place. I mean, even before this whole pandemic began, for how to increase their capacity and how to handle, you know, an extra number of patients. And so I'm confident in their ability.
So again, when you look at those testing numbers, everyone says, oh, the case numbers are going up because we've been testing more, but we've also seen that percent positive rate really going up. Is that concerning when we see it in the teens, hovering the mid-teens? And what does that mean to people? Where do you guys want to see that level? Obviously, low as possible, but what's a worrisome level for y'all?
Sure. So what we want to see is that trend going down, is that graph that we have on our website, especially for the last 2 weeks. We want to see that kind of dotted line that's the trend line going downwards, so it's aiming down instead of up. I think the World Health Organization says that, you know, you want to aim for under 10%, so we like to see it certainly down in single digits, and then the lower, the better. But again, overall, looking especially at that trend, is it going down? Is it going up? And what that's telling us is if it's real low, it means that we are doing enough testing out there to be capturing, we can feel much more confident that we're capturing the vast majority of people who are positive, who are infected. And so then we can do the isolation and guidance for them and the contact tracing and asking contacts to quarantine. And that's how we control the spread of this disease. So we certainly want to see it going down. We look at that, though, in conjunction with things like the hospitalization rates and so forth in terms of what the disease activity overall is doing.
Last week, we saw a new record of cases, 5,020, for the week ending June 20th. More and more of these cases are in younger people, DHEC notes, and our death rate continues to remain low, again, dropping for the second week to 25 deaths. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. What's life like? Are you vacationing? Are you a medical professional on the front lines? Are you someone else on the front lines of this pandemic? What are your worries? What are your concerns? Let us know, 803-563-7169. Have you been mask shamed? Have you mask shamed somebody? We don't condone it, but let us know what's been going on. Your thoughts on everything in this new world, 803-563-7169. AT, we did kind of guilt some people in last episode. We try not to do that, but We just felt we had to.
I was very happy to shame these people for not calling.
The people I heard from a few that they did enjoy our banter, which, I mean, duh.
I mean, classic repartee.
Duh. But until we start our rant, do we have some voicemails? Did it work? Did we shame people into sending some?
Going negative 100% worked for us. We did get a number of voicemails, so we'll be going through them in the next few episodes. But this one that we're going to start with, familiar voice.
Oh.
It's Meg Kinnard, folks.
Whoa, roll tape.
That's right. Roll tape.
Hi, Gavin and AT. This is your friend Meg. I'm calling from lovely Blythewood, South Carolina, where I'm doing a lot of walking. That's where I catch up on all of my podcasts, particularly the SC Lead. But I'm also, when I go out, wearing a mask, I'm social distancing, I'm working a lot because, as you guys may know, I have a job that requires me to go out about in the community and meet people and spend time covering these events of our day-to-day lives. But when I'm not doing that, I'm watching a lot of Netflix, thanks to some recommendations from, not you, AT, but only from Gavin. I've been taking some of his advice on what I should be watching. And so I'll let your listeners just kind of go back through the archive of everything that's been on Gavin's playlist. But one thing that I wanted to add is I think that we should have a little tasting party. And it should involve Totino's Pizza Rolls. It should involve Big Macs. And it should involve Whoppers. Now, I don't typically eat any of those things, but I would be willing to purchase them and set them out in an array so that AT can experience them so as to round out his experience as a red-blooded American male. So I'm just putting that out there. You guys do with it what you will. And let me know, because I think it could be a lot of fun. And if nothing else, we can just watch AT get uncomfortable from consuming so many calories and sodium milligrams. So let me know. Talk to you guys later. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Meg, great to hear from you. Love that you're staying safe and taking my recommendations. And this tasting party with Meg Kinnard, I mean, wow. Does that sound like the greatest thing ever? Like, we're definitely going to have to do this and record it and get, like, the tasting and the chewing.
I'm going to feel so bad.
Oh, it's going to be delicious. What are you talking about?
It's going to be like disgusting America ASMR. I'm going to chew on Mike, and you're all going to have to listen to it.
Well, you know, they're still doing the hot dog eating contest in Coney Island for July 4th. So this could be something similar, not quite a contest, but just, you know, showcasing America's culinary beauty on.
I see you, Meg, coming for my throat, by
she
the way.
Came and, for you.
Yeah, I respect she it. I enjoy you. This. Yeah, clap. Give it up. We love it.
I mean, someone has to do it. It's a one-man battle that I have to do every day.
I know, living at home, my cats are too nice. No one's been gunning for me recently.
Yeah, fast food party for sure. Photos will be great. I mean, just sounds awesome.
What's new with you, Gavin? What did you do this weekend?
I actually was going to have another chill weekend. I started a new book, Michael Crichton. Is it Crichton?
It's Michael Crichton.
Crichton.
It's very embarrassing for you. I thought you were joking the first time you said it.
No, it's C-R-I-C-H-T-O-N. Where's the E in there? Where's the C-I?
He's incredibly famous. Everyone knows who Michael Crichton is.
Oh, now you're going to say it's Dean Koons instead of Dean Koons or something, or Stephen Kong instead of Stephen King.
No, it is Michael Crichton.
Okay, well, you know, spell it like it sounds, okay, people? There's my hot take for today. Spell it like it sounds. You know I have difficulties. Uh-huh. Anyway, I'm reading the book called Airframe. It's kind of interesting if you're into some sort of like quick thriller read. It's checked it out on richlandlibrary.com.org, whatever the Richland Library website is, and like just put it on my Kindle because I just need something new. I got through that third book in the Southern Reach trilogy with like the Annihilation. You know, that whole book series that we talked about took me forever to get through it. I'm still reading the Dalai Lama's book. You know, I need a little break from that.
What
are you talking about? It's free from your Amazon Prime account. There's so many free things from Amazon Prime reading, folks. You got to check it out. Yeah, including
Gavin's
magazines.
Getting paid for this.
Put
in promotion code GGavinJackson42 and get 10% off.
Yeah, you can see all my book reviews on Amazon. And then I also went rafting on Sunday, a little last minute rafting down the river here
disgusting.
In Columbia.
Yeah,
oh, it was perfect out. I finally got to get in some water.
It's very nice out, but it's a garbage river.
I mean,
it's filled with sewage and
it's not. They had all greens. The river keeper, everything was fine. You know, we always check the water quality before we go, so it was fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I had no open cuts or wounds, so. but yeah, what'd you do?
What did I do? The longest day of the year felt like an eternity for me with time dragging.
Oh my God. Here comes like infinite hours. Here comes like the infinite jest reference here.
No infinite jest references. It was a joke. The universe was playing on me. That day was never ending. But here I am now alive. Well, to talk about it.
Your angst is welcome here.
I just had like super quarantine brain stuck inside awfulness.
Your existential dread going on. I got you.
Yeah, my God.
I hear you. It was very, very chill weekend. But I mean, that's what's going on. We got 1,000 new cases a day, it sounds like. So do with that what you will, people. And I did actually, Meg actually popped by. Meg's such a good friend. She popped by on Sunday when she was doing some errands. So we caught up really quick. So we'll probably run into each other.
She's such a good friend. She'll risk her life for you.
Well, I mean, we've both been following social distancing protocols and all the
not
CDC
you. You
guidelines.
Were in the dirty, dirty water.
That's not anti. We didn't float with other people. My group was only three people, me included. You know, we try to stay away from people. People keep coming by you. Actually, I did run into this one family when I was doing like the first rapids. I kind of like bounced into them, and this woman turns and she's like, "You're not my son." I'm like, "No, I'm not."
I just ran into you.
But it was kind of funny because then I got ahead of these people, and then all of a sudden I saw this cooler floating upside down, and this woman screams at me. She's like, "Can you grab that cooler?" Like, you know, just because she had like three kids and everything was going everywhere. I was like, "Sure, no problem."
Sounds like a dream. It sounds awesome.
It just, again, like I'm just such a selfless person. Everyone says this about me.
It was basically the turtle.
It was the turtle. It was the egret. I mean, it's just. This time we're just with the family, so I'm not asking for thanks, but I'm putting it out there so you know that I did it. It's like saying that you volunteered, but you're not doing it for the attention. You're just putting
it
on social media.
You're just one walking I voted sticker.
Yeah. I mean, you're welcome, America. So let's wrap that up right now. And again, let us know what's going on in your world. Let us know what you did this weekend, or if you're doing things, or if you're bending down the hatches again, you're staying inside and watching more Netflix. Let us know what you're watching. 803-563-7169. And thanks again for tuning into the pod. You can keep up with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers, guys. We really appreciate everything they do, and they're on the front lines as well. We are here for you, our lead community, throughout this week, and as the situation continues to develop. We are in full-scale hashtag lead, laugh, love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.
No, they have no stingers. They have nothing. There's no reason for them to be alive.